hppodcraft.com. Phlegon of Tralles was a freedman of the Emperor Hadrian. A monstrous child was born in Aetolia after the death of its father, Polycrates. At a public meeting where it was proposed to do away with it, the father suddenly appeared and begged that the child might be given him. An attempt was made to seize the father, but he snatched up the child, tore it to pieces, and devoured all but the head. When it was proposed to consult the Delphic Oracle on the matter, the head prophesied to the crowd from where it lay on the ground. Then comes the following story.
That is a horrific opening paragraph from...
Yeah.
My goodness.
Phlegon and Machates by Proclus.
And you are listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
At hppodcraft.com. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and we're joined by a guest host, a fellow who was one of our contributors to the Kickstarter that we did to get to Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's right. We got so lucky. One of the rewards was if you contribute a certain amount, you could be a guest on the show. And our guest today, Herbert Sparks, was the one who did it. And thank goodness, because he's a pretty smart guy, it turns out.
Yeah.
No, it's an honor to be here. Thanks, guys.
Now, who was reading at the beginning there? I've heard that voice before.
Have you? That was my wife, Heather Klinke, bringing it home here. She likes to do the classics. So I thought this was a good chance for her to say a bunch of names that we have trouble pronouncing.
Oh, my God. And cannibalism.
And some baby murdering. So it's a little hard to get into this story, but what the heck is happening just in that little excerpt that we heard there?
Father was coming. He didn't want the child to be alive, and they snatched it up and tore it to pieces. And then basically the head of the child's left and then starts prophesizing to the crowd.
Yeah, it was a strange device to frame the story, and I wasn't sure exactly what I was reading at first. It was kind of confusing because the author of this is Proclus, but then the first sentence says Phlegon of Tralles was a freedman of the Emperor Hadrian, introduces him, and then it introduces this freakish child that was born. And so I didn't understand where the story was starting, and the context of it was a little confusing to me. Did you have that problem, Chris?
Yeah, I did. I was like, why is Phlegon being brought into this as the guy that's telling the story? So it's a story of a story of a story, which is also being told by a head of a baby.
Yeah, Proclus wrote a bunch of principles, and he was one of the last great, I guess you could say, ancient Greek philosophers. He's probably one of the last, and he lived towards around the end of the Roman Empire, like right before the Roman Empire fell.
The 5th century is when the Roman Empire fell apart and the Vandals and the Visigoths came in and started taking everything over, and I know that much.
Yeah, he studied in Alexandria and then basically took the works of Plato and expanded on them. I guess this text is from some text from the Vatican, I believe. And these are pieces of some of his works. So maybe that's why it's a little chained together, because there's some myths, it's myths, like you said, layers of stories within stories and things like that.
Well, that first paragraph is sort of a little monster story, and there's a couple of monsters. Because, tell me if I'm wrong, but I got the idea that his father had come back from the dead, because the monstrous child is born.
Yeah, after the death of his father.
And then at the public meeting where they're trying to figure out what to do, the father appears. So is he a ghost or is he a zombie?
He eats the child. He says he tore it up into pieces and devoured all but the head. So that sounds like a zombie to me.
After he gets done eating that, I don't know what happens to him, but then the head, is it the head that's telling the story that we're about to...
Yeah, it's the head.
The head prophesies to the crowd from where it laid on the ground. Then comes the following story. So it's like, what?
So it's like these weird myths within myths, and then you get the big story.
It is very crazy.
It's super crazy. Phlegon also wrote, these are other works that he did, On Marvels, which was a book about ghost prophecies by heads, which is something I guess happened a lot, monstrous births, hermaphrodites, and giant skeletons. And he also wrote a book called On Long-Lived Persons, which was a list of Italians who had passed the age of 100, and he learned about these guys through the Roman census. And I thought, man, that would be a cool book to do a bunch of interviews with people that are over 100 years old.
You know what?
Why is that funny?
Because
I think that's a really good idea.
I think it's a great idea. I didn't understand that. So before the show, you said the same thing.
Yeah.
And I thought you were being funny because in my head, this book is just a list of names.
Oh.
There's no interviews with people. It's just called On Long-Lived Persons. And it's like, you know, Harold Shore, 103.
What? There couldn't be enough guys that live past 100 to make a whole book. I mean, a pamphlet, maybe.
No, I'm an idiot. And now I understand that you weren't joking. Right, so let's clarify some things here. So Phlegon was somebody who had written a lot of stories. Proclus is telling a story that Phlegon told. Proclus was a Neoplatonist. And what is Neoplatonism?
Neoplatonism is a little, he's expanding on what Plato did. He brings stuff into his studies. He wasn't the father of Neoplatonism, but he sort of expanded it and made it pretty popular in his time and took it to another level. It was when the rise of, you know, monotheism was coming about. So they were really expanding on the idea of what they call the one, relating stuff to that. And he wrote a bunch of principles. I would say he's kind of caught between two worlds, meaning like, you know, there's the rise of monotheism and all these concepts, but he's trying to take this concept of the one, but he relates his principles to the Greek gods. So this story sort of has to do with those principles.
All right, cool.
Interesting. Yeah, I know that Plato was so revered that it was thought that his writings were divinely inspired, that he himself was associated with the heavens and with the gods. And so the Neoplatonic school is really almost a religious order in a sense, but philosophical at the same time. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what's like. Yeah.
Good. Chad, you're smart. What time period is this story supposed to be taking place then? Because it's pre Proclus, obviously, but it's also pre Phlegon.
Well, it mentions Philip II of Macedon, and that was the father of Alexander the Great.
Okay, so this predates Alexander the Great.
I kind of draw that into question, because I think the story happens then, but I think this sort of was a legend that sort of built around that time period, and it makes sense that this story would kind of evolve during Alexander or after, because there is some historical people mentioned in this story.
Let's get into the story, yeah.
Phlegon, she is the daughter of a couple named Demostratus, and I don't know if it's Chirito or Carito. I don't know how to pronounce the CH sound, but I'm going to say Chirito. Of course, every time I read it, it kind of made me hungry. I don't know.
Delicious.
I don't think Chiritos are a product, but if they are, they'd be delicious, I'm sure. Or the other thing that I was thinking sometimes when I saw the name, because I'm a child of the 70s, was Charo from The Love Boat.
Me too.
Demostratus and Chirito have a daughter who is Phlegon, and she has been married to Craterus, who is a general for Alexander. Now, I don't know if that means that he's currently a general for Alexander, if that's a role that he was to play in the future. So as far as the time period goes, I'm not exactly sure. But she had died 6 months into that marriage.
And Craterus was a real guy.
Oh, tell me about Craterus, really?
Yeah, Craterus was a general. He's actually really well known and, well, really respected in his time with Alexander. Well, Alexander the Great, I think pretty much everybody knows.
No, they don't.
Well, they, you know, pretty much conquered the known world.
Was he Greek?
Yeah, Macedonian. Yeah, so his father, Philip, united Greek, conquered and or united everybody but the Spartans. That's a whole other story. And then after his death, well, assassination, that's when Alexander took over. And that's when he basically went crazy and bulldozed through the whole known world. he just wouldn't stop. And Craterus was one of the generals with him. Alexander gets all the way to India, dies. A lot of theories whether he was assassinated or not. There's no real true evidence on exactly what happened to him. Craterus becomes known as one of the Diadochi. He's one of many guys of Alexander. So there's all these other generals and stuff. Alexander, he didn't set up any type of succession. So when he died, the rest of everybody was there just to pick up the pieces and what do we do? And it just became like this big free-for-all in the known world of everything he conquered.
Right.
If you could think of it like a very Game of Thrones type thing,
yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what's going on here in this period of time. And they are doing some crazy stuff. They're actually fighting over Alexander's body. Which is kind of crazy too.
Yeah.
So, what?
So like Alexander, when he dies, I think they put him in like a makeshift sarcophagus and filled it with honey just to preserve his body. And a true successor in Macedon, you bury your previous king. To be a true successor, you want to bury the previous king. So all these other guys are kind of starting to fight over the body and who's got it. And it's like this because a guy's body actually becomes a propaganda piece.
Right. Because whoever gets that body can bury it, and that person can now say, I buried him, so I'm now the king.
Yeah, and in the end, Ptolemy ends up with the body and gets it back in. the Ptolemaic Empire, it's not just Egypt. It kind of goes all the way up into what we know as Syria now and all that stuff. So Ptolemy ends up ruling that little area of the world.
Well, so now Philinian has an interesting development in her story. So she died. Actually, they think that the reason that she died was sort of from a broken heart, because she was desperately in love with one of her father's friends, Machates. It just says he's a foreign friend from Pella. He'd come to see the father, and then I guess they'd fallen in love. But because they couldn't be together and she'd been married off to Alexander's general, she passed away. And that's the reason that she died within 6 months of the marriage. But 6 months after she died, she returns to life.
Yeah, not only did she come back to life, but she has been hanging out with Machates. Every night she would come to him and they would be together. I don't know if they were doing it or what.
Of course they were. What do you think that she came back to life for?
They could be just having a good conversation and, you know, drinking coffee and stuff. And
in bed, that's what they're doing? They're just visiting?
Yeah. Why not? Why not?
Well, there's this character of the old nurse,
right,
who sees the woman sitting by Machates.
She recognizes her
as being Philinian. Yeah.
Yeah. So she goes over, tells Philinian, folks, your daughter's not dead. She's alive. Her mom gets super excited at first and then goes, wait a minute. She can't be alive. That's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. And the nurse is going, no, seriously? I know what I'm talking about. It is her. It's all creepy and supernatural. She shows up at night. You go check it out. They're over at the guest house.
Right.
And find out what's going on. So she goes over there and sees that.
Now, this is Chirito. That's the mother.
The mother. Yeah. The mother goes over, sees that that there's a woman sleeping with Machates, but it's kind of dark in the room. So she can't really make out if it's her or not, which I thought was a weird part of the story to kind of throw that in. So she goes back and leaves. She doesn't wake anybody up. She doesn't question it, which I would have.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. It says that she couldn't tell if it was her or not. So she decides, I'm just going to wait around. And when she gets up, nurse, come tell me and I'll check it out to see if it's my daughter or not. I would have completely just woken her up.
Yeah, exactly. If you think it's your daughter, I would be, hey. But then again, maybe she didn't want to come in and go, hey, what are you doing here with my daughter? And then it turns out not to be her daughter. And then she's this crazy old lady.
On the one hand, I thought maybe you're my daughter returned from the dead and it'd be wonderful to see you because I love you more than anything in the world. But on the other hand, I know you need your rest. So I just did not want to bother you.
Hey, dying takes a lot out of you.
It could just be that she wasn't sure it was her and she didn't want to make an ass of herself by, you know, waking up Machates and his lady friend, you know, bursting in, looking at him while they're sleeping.
Oh, you're just a hooker. I'm sorry. I thought you were my daughter.
Exactly. But what happens is she doesn't ever leave the place because she just kind of, you know, supernaturally disappears. She's just gone when morning comes.
Chirito comes to see Machates. Her daughter's gone. So she says, you have to tell me exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I need to know what's happening because if my daughter's alive again, obviously I would like to see her.
Yeah.
So he at first is a little resistant to it, I think.
Yeah.
But then he starts to tell her what happened. And it says, then he described her first coming and the violence of her passion.
Yeah.
So come on. Okay. They're not having coffee.
You're right. The violence of her passion. That is intense.
But he wants to prove that this is actually happening. And so he has like a box with some of her things in it, right?
Yeah. And he shows her the box of all of her items that she gave him. And she recognizes them. So it's like, wow, this is real. This is really happening. She goes, you know, she'll come to me tonight. If you want to see her, I'll send slaves to you and they'll get you and bring you here and you can talk to her. And so she goes back home and is waiting to hear from him. But the more she thinks about it, the more she thinks, well, wait a minute, maybe somebody robbed her daughter's grave and took these clothes and these objects and these things. And it's a trick.
Yeah. So which is, I would think that somebody maybe was just pulling a trick.
Yeah,
I mean, that seems like the logical assumption.
Mm-hmm.
But
Demostratus and Charito hastened to come at once. And when they saw her, they were at first speechless with amazement. Then, with cries of joy, they threw themselves upon their daughter. But Philinian remained cold. Father and mother, she said, cruel indeed have ye been in that ye grudged my living with the stranger for 3 days in my father's house, for it brought harm to no one. But ye shall pay for your meddling with sorrow. I must return to the place appointed for me, though I came not hither without the will of heaven. With these words, she fell down dead, and her body lay stretched upon the bed. Her parents threw themselves upon her, and the house was filled with confusion and sorrow, for the blow was heavy indeed. But the event was strange, and soon became known throughout the town, and finally reached my ears.
I have a question about that, just something to clear up for me real quick. When she says, "Cruel indeed have you been in that you grudged my living with the stranger for 3 days in my father's house, for it brought harm to no one." What does that mean?
No, I don't know what it means. It sounds like a very specific instance that happened that we didn't really actually get any more information on. So it sounds like that maybe she bedded up with Makati's early on. That's what I mean. I could be wrong. That when they met, they fell in love. She hooked up with him for 3 days. Her parents said, "No way. That's not going to happen. You got to go marry this general." And she was like, "Well, what's the problem? Why can't I be with him? This is great."
Yeah, I sort of took it that way, too. It surprised me a little bit because it's very, I don't know, there's something true about that statement. When she says it brought harm to no one, there's so much pain and misery inflicted on people because of the sexual mores of a culture, right? Especially women.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was a very strong, okay, I know that this was something that you didn't want to have happen, but it harmed no one. No, this didn't make anybody's life more difficult. We just fell in love. I don't know. Something about it kind of touched me. Am I crazy?
It's good.
No.
We'll just round this up because it's not quite the end yet. But they go to her tomb. The body isn't there. Everyone freaks out a bit.
Oh, right. They go to check to make absolutely sure that she's risen from the dead.
And she is.
Because her body, it's just a couple of her things, but her body's gone from where they laid her to rest.
Everybody flips out. They reconsecrate all the burial sites and the temples and do some more sacrifices to, you know, clean up everything. Because if something like this happened, there's some sort of evil or infestation or something's wrong. And so they thought they needed to do this. And this is how the story finally ends up.
The stranger Makates, who was visited by the ghost, has committed suicide in despair. Now, if you think it right that I should give the king an account of all this, let me know, and I will send some of those who gave me the various details.
So this story was included in a letter.
Yeah, but why? First of all, this came out of the head of the baby.
Oh, that's right. The deformed, monstrous child.
As told by Proclus.
Right. So why? What was the interest in this particular story? Why was that? I don't get at all. What was so important about it that this monstrous child who was devoured by his zombie father, his head had to speak this story?
Which is like a love story, corpse bride kind of.
Well,
thing.
I have a theory on the story in Proclus, not the baby head, though.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's hear the Proclus one.
I think this goes way back to his studies and stuff like that. This is probably one of the first ancient stories that has some sort of resurrection to it, which is really not tied directly to religion.
Oh.
It has a lot to do with just sheer will, and that has to do a lot with Neoplatonism and the One. I mean, it has a lot to do with, if you think about, like, when we're just talking about Alexander the Great, think about the cultural impact I think, you know, he had for years, even into Rome, and his influence on Caesar and things like that. I mean, just by sheer will alone, he defied the gods. There was all, you know, there's all kinds of legends and stories behind that and stuff. And he just, by sheer will alone, just, you know, conquered the known world. The same thing, like, this story has to do it with, like, without the gods' help or anything, by sheer will alone, you know, she comes back from the dead to be with her love. She's, you know, defining nature and everything. But of course, just like anything else, there's a price to pay. So I think there's a lot of relationship to that and why he's interested in this story or is using this story or developing it, this legend, to fit into his ideology.
Yeah, I see. Might have a little something to do, too, with Christianity being on the rise at this point.
Proclus was actually anti-Christian.
But that's still a story that's going around, that there was this guy, Jesus, actually died and was resurrected and came back. So that's definitely something people are not only talking about, but people are devoting their lives to that idea. So I could see that there might be some resonance with this story and that idea.
Well, a little bit, yeah. I can see that. But I think he's more or less trying to keep it away from religion.
Yeah.
More or less based on, you know, will and the person and the unique being itself. So.
Yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm.
It's strange to me that accidentally we did this right after having done Lygia, which is about a woman resurrecting herself through force of her will.
Yeah.
To be with her lover.
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to bring that up, too. So, I mean, you can see Lovecraft, you know, he mentions this, I think, in the same context, basically. And I guess Poe had been familiar with some of this.
I had another question, actually. There was a word in here. I feel real dumb about this. I've never made this connection before. But when they're talking about how they have to reconsecrate the burial sites, mm-hmm. they have to get the favor of the gods so that they can dispel any evil. It says, and that Hermes, Chthonius, and the Eumenides should be propitiated. And propitiated means appeased to a god or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Chthonius? I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Well, I know that word. Chthonius? It's subterranean. It means under the ground, under the earth, something like that.
Okay. But in this context, it's used as the last name of Hermes.
So there's Hermes under the earth? Hermes of the earth?
Yeah, I don't know how they tied that, like to the underworld or something. I'm not sure.
Well, when I looked it up just in Wikipedia, it says Chthonius, an epithet of several major gods, including Zeus, Hades, Hermes, and Dionysus.
No, that I've never seen before. You're right. But the Chthonian, which is not Lovecraft, but it's of the mythos. I've looked up Chthonian before and found out that it meant subterranean.
Speaking of legends, but I was doing research of legends and all that stuff in history in relation to this, and finding like UFOs and Bigfoot, and this has to do with kind of with the ancient vampires sort of rising from the dead. You watch $6 Million Man?
Yeah.
Man, did I have a flashback, because somehow I went down a rabbit hole online and I found this, and I totally forgot about this. You remember Lee Majors fought Andre the Giant in $6 Million Man, and Andre the Giant was Bigfoot.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I know Bigfoot, because Bigfoot wasn't really a Bigfoot. It was like a cyborg that
yeah.
was made to look like Bigfoot.
And it gets even crazier than that. It's probably one of the most crazy $6 Million Man episodes ever made.
Andre the Giant actually played the Bigfoot in that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I remember that episode quite well.
Wait, so the Bigfoot was cybernetic? It was like engineered somehow?
Yeah, because they were trying to...
You don't remember? There were aliens hiding in the mountains, and they created the robotic Bigfoot to scare people away while they were like repairing their spaceship.
Whoa! That's like a Whisperer in Darkness kind of thing.
I didn't know there were aliens in $6 Million Man. That's amazing. Oh, you're right. No, I'm looking on Wikipedia on Bionic, the wiki.com, the Bionic, the $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman wiki. Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch, is an alien cyborg created by a group of aliens visiting Earth. He was constructed by the alien Shaolon, an imitation of a lower form of life from the alien homeworld, using technology called Niosynthetics, an advanced form of bionics, which were powered by Mergeron. His was created to cultivate mystery and fear in a remote part of the Pacific Northwest in order to protect the location identity of the alien secret base. Amazing.
That is not what I thought our conversation would lead to when we were talking about classic weird tales.
Or weird tales. Well, now, Lovecraft brings up this particular story. He says, and I quote, this is out of Supernatural Horror and Literature, "It is in Phlegon that we first find that hideous tale of the corpse bride, Belinian and Machates, later related by Proclus in the modern times, forming the inspiration for Goethe's Bride of Corinth and Washington Irving's German Student. By the time the old northern myths take literary form, and in that later time when the weird appears as a steady element in the literature of the day, we find it mostly in metrical dress, as indeed we find the greater part of the strictly imaginative writing of the Middle Ages and Renaissance."
So essentially he's saying the weird really developed through poetry later, but in the earliest versions of it, it was part of prose. It was storytelling, always.
Yeah. Now, but in the whole beginning of the section, Lovecraft says cosmic terror appears as an ingredient of the earliest folklore of all races. Of course, everything is unknown to us at some point. We just don't know. Right. Something happens or somebody dies out in the woods, especially primitive man, won't know what it is that killed them. But I think it is in man's nature to quickly try and quantify things and give it names. So when supernatural events happen or strange things go on, like if somebody dies mysteriously, they'll go, oh, it was a ghost that did it, a manicure or whatever. They make labels for everything. And I mean, that's what people do. We quantify things. So I don't know how much of these stories are actually weird in the sense of unknown, a cosmic terror where you don't really understand the nature of the universe at all. Whereas these primitive people really like to quickly give explanations for things, even if they were gods or they were spirits or they were creatures.
Yeah, that makes sense, except, it's being told by a baby's head.
Well, there's a lot about this story that doesn't make any sense to me. So I guess this does fall under the weird, but it also could just be explained she's a ghost.
Sure. Well, I think that Lovecraft's saying it's right and that he's saying it's an ingredient. The reason that people come up with these monsters and gods is because they're scared to death of what's actually out there that they don't know about, the fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Which I think is his cosmic terror. What he's saying is that it's an ingredient, right? So that cosmic terror comes in, and as a response to it, they come up with crazy bullshit, and that's weird fiction.
Right.
You see more of what Lovecraft's aesthetic is in classical literature than you do in more modern stuff, where it is a little more rigid what people say things are. I guess what I'm saying is that there's, when I read things that are very old, and part of this is due to the fact that they've been retold a lot of times, or maybe the stories are fragmented by the time you get them.
Mm-hmm.
But as you just said, like, a lot of things don't make sense. That adds to the weirdness of it.
Absolutely. I mean, this story seems super weird because we don't really... She's actually physically resurrected from the dead, but she still has these weird properties where she can kind of just vanish.
Why do you think they tie it to at least one person in history, though? I wouldn't say he was obscure, but he was popular.
Well, I think just to try and lend credence to it, that it is a true account. Because, you know, people did believe in the supernatural at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people still do believe in supernatural things all the time. There's people that believe in UFOs and ghosts and
cybernetic Bigfoot.
And cybernetic Bigfoot.
Hey, but my question, Herb, do you think this was actually a legend about one of his wives and not just a fiction?
I think it's tied to it, definitely. And somehow it just mutated over the ages. Proclus kind of maybe took it and went with it. I do believe there is some credence to something tied to the general. He was really popular amongst his men. He died in actually one of the Civil War battles, or during the Wars of the Successors, I guess you could say. He definitely was in line to take the throne too, because he was so popular.
So do you think maybe that this story is somehow trying to discredit? I mean, it doesn't really say much about him, except that he was married to this woman. She didn't want to be married to him. So I guess it's sort of negative.
So I just kind of find it funny that it's just the one particular person that they tie to it.
Which is something Lovecraft, of course, liked to do, is try and find real events and real books and people and places and try and use them in his stories.
Yeah, and maybe Proclus did that too, you know, mixing it all in.
So Herb, why is history so interesting to you? When did you first start to acquire you wanted to do reading in this period, or what is it about it that fascinates you?
I tend to love Napoleonic history the most. Ancient history tends to be, you know, a side interest of mine. I guess you guys met doing a lot of the gaming with Lovecraft, right?
We played Call of Cthulhu together, for sure.
Call of Cthulhu, yeah, which I'm familiar with too, but I tend more towards the strategy war gaming stuff. So when you start getting into that, you start really tying, you know, and then start really getting interested into what that period of time is and what the game revolves around. I go full blown and just start reading all the historical aspects towards it and things like that.
Well, I got to say, it didn't occur to me that we would ever be covering something that's this old in our discussion of Lovecraft's, you know, stories that he liked. So many of them I thought would be just short stories that, like, in the tradition of what we've been doing. So it was really fun to go this far back and look at what a monster story looks like from, you know, the 5th century.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. This story, and it's very short.
Yeah, I like that about it the best.
I think that's all we really got for this particular story.
Herb, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This is great stuff. I'm glad you chose this story. And obviously, you know a lot about this kind of thing, and it's opened up a few areas of interest for me. The $6 million man among them. But I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem. It's great.
Also, I want to remind folks that we're doing a contest, and that's with CryptoCurium.com, where you could win one of two idols by taking a picture of yourself in your best Lovecraftian pose. Now, we've gotten some submissions, and they are outstanding, but don't let those pictures deter you from sending in your own pictures, because we're judging this solely on your pose. So how you are posed. So you don't have to have some elaborate costumes or photo techniques or anything.
I mean,
like
I like that.
That
stuff.
I do too, and I think they're great, and maybe that'll help you out a little bit. But if somebody comes out with a great pose, you know, just get your wife or your friend to take a picture of you doing something Lovecrafty. And we want to get more pictures in. Right now we only have about 8 or 9, so let's get some more out there.
Let's really make this a competition.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see a fight here.
All right, well, I want to thank Heather Klinke for being our reader this week.
Thank you, Heather.
Very late notice, but she did a great job. Now, next week, we're actually going to not be covering a story. We're going to be releasing our coverage of the convention in Providence. We've been logging the audio that we took. There's some really good stuff there. I think it's going to be a really interesting show. So no story that you have to read beforehand. Just tune in and you can hear what we experienced while we were there for that week.
And this, of course, is another one of the rewards, one of our stretch goals that we had for our Kickstarter. And so we are going to share this with everybody.
The live show did go out to our Kickstarter backers. And I just wanted to let folks know, because a few people wrote in to ask, yes, we will eventually release it for everybody.
Yeah, we're looking at probably October.
It'll come out eventually. That's us covering Fungi from Yugoth. But in the meantime, we've got the convention coverage next week, and I look forward to having you listen, hopefully. With that, I am Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Herb Sparks.
And you're listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
HPPodcraft.com.
HPPodcraft.com.